Hey, welcome to the Happy Abby Podcast. I'm your host, Ted Cluck, joined as always in studio by my good friends, my partner in radio, my partner in all things British costume drama, Ron Martin. Baby, excited to be back on the airwaves with you. This feels, I know, like the old reformatory days.
Oh, it always does. Always.
Except that we have better topics now in Absolutely. That we get to talk exclusively about British television shows. The TV dramas crafted by the great Julian Fellowes. And we're here today to talk about a Netflix show called The English Game. This is going to be dynamic, baby, and it's going to be explosive because in a rare turn of events, you and I disagree about this.
I know. I'm still a little stunned by that. I'm still a little shaken.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of tension on our radio programs because either, as is the case 95% of the time, we don't care. But often when we do care, we agree. But this was one that I think I texted you about it.
Yeah.
And I texted a hot take. I threw out some heat.
Oh, it was saying, an HT. Yeah,
for sure. It was a hot take because I said that the show was, quote, garbage.
Yeah.
And you pushed back. And here we are. This is where we find ourselves. And it's been a little cold, a little distant between us.
Yeah, it's been a little rough, man. We're experiencing just one of those difficult dips in our relationship. We'll get through it, dude. Peaks and valleys.
You get 2.4s on a podcast.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Annie F. Downs podcast, by the way, where we're going to talk about the Enneagram. But shout out Annie F. Downs. But you get 2.4s on a program like this, and it promises to be explosive.
Oh, it promises to be big, and it promises to be as big as our last Happy Abby.
That's right, dude. Huge. People have not stopped talking.
No, I mean, I get emails.
Well, yeah, dude, I get fan mail on it too.
All the time. It's,
apologies to people that we haven't responded to yet on the fan mail. But baby, let me set this up by saying that The English Game was highly anticipated, I think, by both of us, in that it was kind of the next big British costume drama from the great Julian Fellowes, who of course made Downton Abbey. All the seasons of Downton that we enjoyed, the Downton Abbey movie, which was trash, but we still enjoyed it. So we're big Julian Fellowes guys, and we were excited about this. And I was excited when it appeared on Netflix. I knew my lady, of course, is big on all the British costume dramas and stuff. So I knew we would be watching it. And I just want to start by saying, I got a couple of episodes into it with KK.
Yeah.
And we're looking at each other and we're going, does this suck? like you tell me if it sucks. And she's kind of like, no, you tell me if it sucks, because we enjoyed the visuals. Yeah. You know, a lot of the typical like Julian Fellowes eye candy was there. But like, to me, the story wasn't there. The characters weren't there. To me, like, and I want to get your take on this. I'm getting to a point.
Oh, you'll get my hot take on this, Bob.
Yeah, no, the point is, Downton did such an amazing job, I think, of telling all these super real feeling kind of family and character dramas and unfolding them in a slow burn, right? So it was the slowest of slow burns. Everything felt earned. Everything emotionally that you were feeling about the characters, it felt like they really did the work to get you there in a genuine way. With this deal, man, with The English Game, it felt like they're like, oh, dude, social issue, infertility. Like they're just throwing all these like issues at you in the first couple eps. None of it feels earned. I don't know. That's just, and I kept waiting for that to change. And then The English Game was over. And I'm like, oh, this was just a mediocre show that we watched all the episodes of. That's kind of where I was at, dude. So I want you to speak into that because you love the show.
Well, I mean, okay. So let me qual a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if it's hard because Fellowes did Downton, I mean, anything he does is just going to be compared with Downton, and nothing is going to be or ever going to be Downton for the rest of time. I mean, until we literally are dead and somebody else comes up with a show of that just indescribable quality.
Yeah, when we're dead.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, so for me, like, I jump into a Fellowes show and immediately I can't help but just I'm looking for just maybe the greatest cast of any show of all time, Downton Abbey,
totally.
to be applied to this show. And it's like, I'm disappointed before, like, even the opening credits, you know, like, pop up, right? Because I know it's not going to happen. So I just, so for me with the English game, I didn't even read about what the premise was as much as it was like, wait a minute, this is Fellows. It's some soccer thing, but it's a drama. And I mean, I like my sports movies. I like my sports dramas. I'm all good with it. And so I think my initial impression was, I like where they're going with it. I'm not sure where they're going with it. And I was actually disappointed in the lead characters, man. I'm not totally at odds with you on this. At the same time,
dude, lean into that a little bit, man, because I have some main character stuff.
Well, okay, so the two main you know characters was Arthur and Fergus, right?
Dude, Arthur Kinnaird, male model. Okay,
yeah, absolutely.
Like truly one of the most stunning guys.
Like, so, like, with that beard and that, like, literally,
dude, incredibly
one of the most
stunning.
Handsome dudes of all
time. Yeah, stunning to look at, but all the charisma of like a JCPenney's golf shirt model in 1993.
dude, the
guy's stiff as a board.
Yeah,
okay?
He was like, really drawn in. He was a very drawn in character, and then Fergus was kind of more of the main character. But I thought, I mean, to me, it was like, where did this guy even come from? You like, he didn't really command the screen the way that you're used to Fellows characters commanding the screen.
Well, dude, I'll tell you where he came from. He came from Portland, circa like right now. You know what I mean? And this is one of my theories on maybe why you love this show, was that even though it was England in like 1859 or whatever, they all looked like modern day hipsters.
Yeah, it felt like going to a Sojourn conference when they.
Well, it was like going to a Soj con for like going out to dinner in Nashville.
No, I get it.
Like,
you're just saying,
Fergie,
you're saying, like, baby, you just felt at home. Like, you felt like camaraderie right there when you were watching.
You felt like that's as close, baby. Listen to me. This is as close as you're going to get to a Sojourn conference.
Right.
Okay.
Version of a Sojourn comp.
It's got a bunch of rich hipsters drinking expensive wine and eating steaks, except that it's England and you're watching it instead of doing it.
Yeah. The only thing that can make it better is if it was in England, obviously.
Well, yeah, I'm sure 2021 Soj Comp is going to be in England.
Yeah, we'll probably bump it out there.
Unlike the rest of the planet, they're somehow going to be like rich after COVID, and they're going to have all kinds of money.
They're going to have a 50% surplus after COVID.
To literally light on fire so that you guys can quote-unquote vision cast and quote-unquote rest, right? Judas H. Priest.
A lot of quotations going on there, baby.
Quote-unquote.
Quotations like literally coming out of your ears right now.
You're going to be so overworked from sitting in your house for 11 months that they're going to need to pamper you guys
more. It's going
to
be rough.
So back to the
English, man. It was I struggle when I don't love the characters, man, and I didn't love the characters, but I was okay, this is where they had me. I want to know where they had you, or they didn't have you. Yeah. They had me because I love origin stories, man. So I had no idea that soccer or like football or whatever we want to call it, however pretentious we want to be about what we want to call it. I had no idea it was started by a bunch of like rich English, like, you know, aristocrats. I had no clue about that.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense because in America, it's still like a lot of just kind of rich a-holes who are good at soccer. But, as per, like, most of the guys at the college that I went to, that's what I'm basing that on, like, 1 3-year period in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. Like, that part, I guess it didn't grab me because I didn't so much care about where soccer came from. You know what I mean? And to me, like, the soccer was the least interesting part of it in the same way that, like, I don't know, race car driving, I guess, was a part of Downton Abbey, but it was the least interesting part.
Right.
Because you were so busy sort of.
It was a backdrop.
You were so busy kind of like being in the lives of all these characters that for the most part in Downton were multidimensional. Like, I feel like the most one-dimensional character in Downton was Tom Branson.
Yeah.
And I feel like all these characters were Tom Branson.
No, that's fair, man. That's fair.
Yeah. I don't know. As an actor and just as a guy to look at, I liked Fergie Suter. I feel like there was some potential there with him, and I liked the scenes that he was in. Arthur and his wife couldn't have cared less, dude. Like, any scene they were in, I was just yawning and checking my watch. I liked Jimmy.
What about Fergie's love interest, man?
Dude, Fergie's love interest was Martha Almond. Yeah, she was kind of interesting.
She was pretty complex.
Yeah, I was kind of interested in that. Like, if more of the show had been about her, it would have been fine. Dude, you know who I loved? You know who won the show for me? Was Jimmy's wife, Doris.
Yeah.
Like, I was team Doris, man. She just seemed cool. Like, I would watch a 6-episode Netflix thing about Doris.
Yeah.
You know, like, tell me about her life. What is she doing during the day?
Yeah.
You know? Like, do she and Jimmy get tired of each other after Jimmy breaks his leg? Like, dude, I want to watch a show about that, you know?
She's making shepherd's pie during the day, man. That's what she's doing. But
dude, I'm not going to lie, and not to be weird, she seemed perfect. You know what I mean? In a way that wasn't boring. Like,
she just makes
shepherd's pie and, like, hangs out with Jimmy, and they laugh a whole bunch.
But she was kind of, she had a weird, like, edge to her.
Yeah, I like that, though. Like, I like the edgy ones.
The other thing, too, man, is, I mean, you know, to be fair, I guess, you don't have a lot of opportunity to develop characters in 6 eps. You know what I mean? You got to kind of get to it pretty quick.
Yeah.
And so I think I think that's what lacked it, probably for you and for me, too, as well. It's just like, man, there just wasn't enough time. Like, they could have stretched this thing out to, like, you know, 15 eps, and I think we would be seeing a completely different series.
Yeah, you know, dude. I mean? Okay, so let's talk about some of the ingredients in Downton that made Downton magical that this lacked. And I think one of them, you hit the nail on the head there, is just time, right? So I don't know if they went into Downton feeling like, okay, we've got 7 years to develop this thing, and we can literally, like, we can go as slow as we want. But, like, somebody, whoever was writing the checks to produce Downton, like, there was some patience there. You know what I mean? There was a sense of, all right, we can slow burn all these characters. We can start Thomas Barrow as, like, despicable, and then over the course of, like, 6 or 7 years, we can make him sympathetic and make it to where you're really rooting for him and caring about him. And, you know, it really was masterful on that level. I think, too, there were some just visual things that Downton did differently, in that even a mediocre Downton ep, right? And there were some years there, dude. There were some seasons where I felt like Downton was kind of going every other. Like, you'd have a banger, you'd have a like heat check episode, and then you'd have kind of a placeholder.
Yeah,
but
for
even
sure.
even the placeholder eps, dude, you were still getting that, like, visual porn of, like, the big wide shots of the castle and the countryside.
You felt like you were there. I mean, even a mediocre. I'm gonna make a bold statement, man. I was never disappointed after an ep of abs. You know,
not once, dude.
I mean,
not
there are some episodes that are way better than others, like any series, but I never walked away disappointed thinking, gosh, that was just really bad.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So part of this, dude, I think part of where the English game kind of fell flat for me, and maybe it's just because I know how sports work too much, and you kind of know how sports work too. Like, it just never occurred to me that it would be controversial that the heads of these soccer teams would want to start paying players to get better. And I was just like, why hasn't this always been a thing? You know, like, that's just how sports works.
That point of controversy wasn't quite controversial enough for you.
Dude, right. And I didn't care. I didn't care what the, like, aristocratic blue-blooded guys thought about it. Like, there was no sympathy for those guys. And I didn't know if there was supposed to be. I was just confused. I didn't know, Ron, like, who I was supposed to like in the program Doris, you know?
So just to set it up, so you have this guy, Arthur Kinnaird, who is kind of like the aristocrat guy who is with this group of guys that started, like, the soccer federation. They basically, like, started the game on, a professional level.
Right.
But they wanted to keep it something that was played for the love of the game, where nobody got paid, to keep it kind of balanced and even.
Pure. Yeah, quote unquote pure.
And then you got Fergie Souter, who represented sort of the blue collar version side of the game, where he worked for factories that put together these teams that tried to go against, like, the big, not like money teams, because they weren't being paid. But what they kind of showed through this was that the teams that were comprised of, like, rich dudes, they actually had the luxury and the time to train and to practice. Whereas
they could train all they wanted because the other guys had to go and do jobs.
Yeah, they didn't have to work, essentially. And so guys like Fergie Souter that, like, worked for the mill, and then the mill sponsored a team, they had to work all day, 6 days a week, and they didn't have time to, like, develop their skills. So in a sense, what it got proved in the end was that essentially everybody had been getting paid to play if you kind of look at, if you take it from that angle.
Sure.
Because all these rich guys had enough money to where they could just practice, rehearse, and train. And so so that's what really, I mean, that's really just that's the crux of it right there. Would you agree?
I mean, I would agree.
Just snapshotting it, you know?
Also, Fergie Suter, like 4 feet tall, I think.
That was like really baffling to me.
Really tiny guy, dude. He's like shorter than all the dudes, like shorter than all the women, like really short guy, but not. Okay, so I got two questions for you. Number one, Fergie Suter, good-looking guy, yes or no? Are we in on Fergie's looks? Because I'm in. I'm team Fergie's looks.
Really? I was going to say a little. I was going to say kind of mediocre.
Yeah, I mean, he's not like beautiful in the vein of like Arthur Kinnaird.
Yeah, well, but that's what I'm saying. It's hard not to compare him with Arth because Arth
I feel like
is
Fergie. Like, if you had been friends with him in college, he would have been like the fun, kind of funny looking, but like cool dude that lived on your wing, and that you were happy when he showed up to all this stuff. You know, like if you were going out for an evening and like Fergie showed up, you'd be like, oh, cool, this guy's fun, dude.
Yeah, Ferg was like the dependable guy. He was he's kind of one of those dudes that was like a little too serious, but he could loosen up when he needed to, but he was dependable. You could count on him being there, right?
Yeah, totally.
Although that changed at some point in the show but even then he was driven by principle, man. That was Ferg.
He wanted to take care of his fam. I get that.
Right.
I like that.
But Arthur wasn't much different. So I think what you see as we're talking through this, Arthur, even though he came from all of this money and privilege, he kind of was principled like Ferg. So you kind of
They kind of tried to do the whole like, oh, Arthur's pissed off at his dad thing. You know, that was supposed to make him sympathetic. There were all these things that were like, and maybe we're getting to the undefinable qualities of an actor versus another actor. But like, I feel like they did all the right tricks to like make him sympathetic. Like, oh, he does a nice thing for his wife and he's pissed off at his dad. And like all the boxes were checked, except that you never really cared about him, you know? And maybe it's just this, dude. If a guy's that rich and good looking, you want to see him fail.
Yeah.
Like you want to see him get kicked in the junk. And I don't know, maybe he could never overcome that.
Well, I think that's a great point though, too. And it kind of brings you back to, this is what's so strange, right? So Arthur essentially in the entire, like in the 6-ep series, like he doesn't really do anything wrong. He doesn't there's no misstep with Art.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He's like Iceman in Top Gun. Like he's the villain, but at the end of the day, he does everything right.
Right. He just doesn't really do anything wrong. He's principled. Yeah. He's like learning things about the culture and about himself and about his marriage as he's going through this, about the game, you know? And so he's like the processor in all of it.
Dude, he buys like a nature preserve for his lady after they lose their baby. Like, hey, most guys would be like, I got you a half a dozen roses and I feel really bummed. But like, hey, P.S., dude, just to cheer you up, I bought you this whole nature preserve. It's
I bought
the most
you entire
beautiful
nature preserve just for good times.
It's the most beautiful vista in the whole country. So, you know.
Yeah, totally. But then this is what's so weird, though. Let me just hit with what you just said about like, man, whenever there's like a rich guy in a series, you always want to see him fail, except for Downton Abbs.
Exactly, dude, because they were all rich guys. And honestly, the guy I wanted to see fail the most was the poor guy. It was Tom Branson, who was just insufferable, dude.
I know, you really hated Branson. I'm still fascinated
dude,
by that.
Yeah, he was just boring, dude. He Branson was like every college sophomore that I teach who takes like a half of a philosophy class and then knows everything. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
Branson, like, he was the embodiment of that guy. But okay, dude, so here's my hot take on the English game. I think it should have been a one-off. I think they should have leaned really hard into this sports movie motif.
Just one app, you're saying?
It should have been a movie. It should have been a Netflix movie where it's 2.5 hours of sports movie where the poor team beats the rich team. And you can still have Fergie falling in love with that girl. You can still have like Arthur Kinnaird being pissed off at his dad and trying to save the marriage and all that stuff. You can have still the Fergie Jimmy kind of like friendship, bromance kind of thing. You could still have all that, but you can have it culminate in like the mill team beating the rich team, and then everybody goes home happy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think by making you wait it out over 6 episodes, you're kind of lulled into looking for this magical Downton Abbey character development thing that they just never get around to delivering. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, dude, I cannot argue with that, man. I think that's well said. I think for my tastes, I would have preferred, so I'll go the other way with it, man. I would have preferred that they had done 12 to 15 eps so that they could kind of do what you're talking about in 2 hours, but extend it out a little bit. And I also thought, man, I wish the, like, okay, I can't get past Fergie. I wish they would have recast Fergs, man. I didn't love the guy.
Talk about that, man. What was your issue with Fergs?
Because, you know, it's weird because they cast Rich Guy Arthur as kind of an anti-hero. But I mean, in terms of Fergs being like the blue collar hero, I need a little bit more than what he was, man.
Yeah, dude, you need a little, maybe a little taller, a little broader shouldered. I don't know. He's got to be able to exist on screen with Kinnaird and have it be believable.
Yeah, he was not believable, man. He was not even as an athlete, you looked at him and said, man, I'm not buying it.
Well, dude, nobody in this thing has played soccer before in their lives. Okay, let's get that out of the way. Like, believe me, I know jack about soccer because I don't care about it and I don't like it. But yeah, my
like
kid
you and
plays.
Everybody else in America.
Yeah, dude, my kid. Exactly. I'm typical ugly American right here, man. Every stereotype. But like, so my kid plays. So I've watched a decent amount of soccer, and none of those guys have ever played soccer before. It was like, dude, the soccer pitch, if you will, was the moon to these guys. Okay.
Yeah.
So that was a thing. I don't know. Again, if you're doing a one-off though, I think you're probably finding some good soccer players. You're kind of shooting it around Fergie and Kinnaird so that you don't have to see a lot of them playing soccer.
Well, I think too though, man. I mean, this was pre like soccer players having all the tricks down too, right? So they're kind of they're like vintage soccer players. So it's going to be baseball where everybody has like a thin piece of leather around their hand for a mitt. And, you know, they're literally like brutalizing themselves as they're trying to play this game.
Yeah. Well, dude, and to be honest, in these guys' defense, they're playing in a wheat field. Totally. Did you see that grass? Like nobody's mowing.
No one's mowing.
Nobody's cutting the grass, which, okay, dude, it begs the question. This is just a Downton to this kind of continuity thing. Dude, Downton abs, like that grass is getting cut every other day, dude.
Oh, you could, well, yeah. 100%.
You could like putt a golf ball on that grass. And this grass, nobody's cutting it. I don't get it, dude. I don't know the mowing situation in England in the 1850s. Like that to me is a mystery. So I just don't.
Hey, here's another mystery for you, man. This one is the one that stuck me. And I kept saying this to Big N, man, after every ep. But did it strike you? Why was every game like a minute long?
Yeah, dude. Dude. Like...
Dude, are these games literally like 5 minutes? Maybe they were. Maybe they were like 5 minutes.
Maybe that's how they timed
long.
It back then. It was like a 4 minute game. So you had to like get your work done really quick.
I mean, dude, did it feel that way to you? Because I was like, dude, they did that initial, whatever they call it, the kickoff or whatever it was. Yeah, yeah. And then it was like a minute later, it was like they're standing there with their hands down.
Exactly, dude. And it's like, oh, Fergie played like. He played like rubbish in this game. And I'm like, I didn't see it. I saw a minute and a half.
Right. Like he kicked one goal, missed, game over.
Yeah, exactly, dude. Maybe it's like, you remember how when you used to play like pickup basketball in the driveway and it was like next score wins?
Yeah.
Maybe it was always next score wins. It was just like first score wins.
Yeah, I think it was just one quarter.
If you kick the ball through that thing and dude, maybe, okay, I'm getting it now. Maybe it was practical because they had no nets on the goal. So maybe the implication was you kick the ball through that thing, it's rolling like a mile and a half down a hill and it's gone, you know? So, all right, we're going to take a hiatus for a week until we find another soccer ball.
And yeah, okay. And so, yeah, that's good, man. I like your theory. Here's my other thing.
Yeah.
All they ever talked about. Okay. So again, for our listeners, they talked about winning the FA Cup, which was like the championship game. But that it seems like that's the only game they ever played was the FA Cup. There were no other games. Yeah. It was just like every year all they played, like all the NFL plays is one game called the Super Bowl.
Right. Hey, week one, it's the Super Bowl.
Right.
Week two, also the Super Bowl. Yeah, dude, I couldn't agree more. Okay, so I've got one more nitpick, and then I've got like a big kind of wide angle question about you and me that I want to get to.
Yeah, let's do it.
Here's the nitpick, dude. Why did they have to kill a dog off? It was like episode 2 or episode 3. There was like that secondary character. I remember this dude because his name was Ted and he starts a t-shirt company, which I thought was dope, dude.
Yeah, that was
It's like 2020. Everybody's got their own like t-shirt apparel company. So Ted breaks off from the soccer team. He's like, I want to do textiles. I want to start my own like whatever. And Kinnaird, they're trying to show that he's a good guy, so he funds the t-shirt company.
He funds the startup.
Yeah, he funds the startup, dude. He's like a venture capitalist. Except that this guy, Ted, like, his dog gets shot. And I'm like, why the H do we have to do that, dude? Because, like, you know me. I like a dog in a show. I like a dog in a movie.
You don't like a dog in real life, though, baby. That's where we agree on a lot of things.
I don't like a dog in real life, dude. I like TV dogs, okay? Right. But they get you all attached to this Ted. And, dude, so here was my hot take as I was watching it. KK and I have this thing where, like, we like to pick the sacrificial lamb in a show.
Yeah.
And I was watching this Ted character, and I'm like, yo, this guy's dead meat, dude. He's going to die in this ep. Wait, remember when they're all doing the pitchforks? And
I thought he was done. I thought he was donezo, dude.
Yeah. And I told KK, I'm like, this guy's got a kind face, so he's going to die, right? Like, yeah. There's going to be a stray bullet. He's just going to get shot in this thing. And he didn't, but his dog died, dude. Spoilers. Mm-hmm. Ted's dog dies in, like, episode 2 or 3. But I don't know, dude. I had an issue with that, man, and I had trouble. The other thing, man, and tell me if you thought this thought. Like, at the end of episode 4, when Jimmy gets his leg broken in half, and he's kind of laying on the bed there, I thought they were going to kill him off.
Oh,
I thought,
dude, we were going to... 100, man. I totally thought, like, I was so shocked when he lived through that.
Dude, I thought they were going to go full-on Sybil that thing and just have a weirdo death.
That's not beyond fellows to do that, obvi, you know?
Yeah, dude.
I thought he was done.
Yeah, he was not afraid to kill people off, just kind of willy-nilly.
Yeah, I thought he was going to go, and then it was going to spur on Fergie to, like, you know, obviously win the FA Cup and do it for him. You know, the typical story.
Yeah, do it for Jimmy.
Do it for Jimmy. Win one for the Jimmy.
Dude, honestly, Jimmy was kind of the most likable dude.
Jimmy was the most... Yeah, I mean, that's a good point, man. Jimmy was probably the most human
character. Yeah, he's like, I'm loyal to my friend. I don't know, I'm like building a bed out of wood for my wife. I don't even know what I'm doing. Like, yeah, Jimmy totally was likable. Yeah, really likable, man.
Yeah, Jimmy, I know, I wish Jimmy would have had... Again, man, you bump that thing up to 15 eps, and all of a sudden Jimmy becomes like, has a story. They didn't give Jimmy a story at all.
Yeah, exactly, dude. Okay, so here's my big... like, wide angle question. Why are these Julian Fellow shows so attractive to you and me? Because, dude, I grew up in a cornfield in Indiana. I grew up like the farthest thing away from aristocratic England as humanly possible. You kind of did too, growing up in California, riding your dirt bikes, you know, doing all that. Like, so you and I are not like the target demo for these things. Why the attraction? Also, like, sub question, when are you going to get your doctorate from England, dude? Because I feel like the ultimate pastor flex
is
not just to get a doctorate. Like, getting a doctorate is kind of like a semi flex. It's like, hey, I got time, I'm an intellectual, whatever, I'm going to get my doctorate. But, like, the ultimate flex is to do it in England.
Baby, let
like,
me ask,
oh, yeah. Like, I'm going to be away from the, I'm going to be out of the pulpit for 6 months because I'm going over for my, I got to do my cohort, you know, right? I got to go talk to my English guys.
I'll answer number two first. Number one, I'm not an intellectual, and I don't have time. Therefore, I'm doing my doctorate at Midwestern, right?
Here you go. Shout out Midwestern, dude. It gives you more Jared time, though, dude. You're going to get mad Jared time.
Oh, mad Jared C time, obviously.
Insane. Yeah. That's
going to be crazy. But, you know, going deeper into the Midwest to get my doctorate is not going to England to get my doctorate.
I would watch a 6-episode Netflix show about you and Jared, like, sharing a dorm room, doing your doctorates together. You know what I mean?
I think you might even watch a 12-15 episode.
Let's sell the H out of that thing, dude. I want a piece of the action, obvs.
Yeah, no, I get it.
I mean, I'm watching as
you write the script and you get a bigger piece of the action than you could possibly imagine.
Baby, episode one is you two decorating the dorm room. Because I know there's going to be sparks flying, dude.
There is going to be sparks flying because I can't take another Tom Brady, like, signed autograph photo hanging on.
Well, dude, you're going to, this is episode one, okay? Open. Big R, you know, you show up with your little minimalist, like, satchel of, like, you know, little $1,000 leather satchel of stuff for the dorm room. You go in. He's already got that thing wallpapered with, like, Tom Brady posters and, like, Midwestern guy stuff, dude. And then you get out a little roll of, like, artisanal duct tape. Like, not the real stuff, but, like, artisanal, like, hipster duct tape. And you put a strip down the middle of the room. And you're like, bro, I love you. I love you so much. I've been trying to work you for a book deal for 6 years, but this has to stop. Like, the Brady posters have to come down.
Yeah, like we are. We, like this is driving a stake.
Yeah, it's driving
in our
a
romance
stake through the
already.
Heart of this romance. Yeah. Okay, so that's episode one, dude, and I'm watching after that because I want to know what happens.
Yeah.
Episode two is like, are our wives going to be friends? Episode three is, I don't know, dude. You tell me, but
at that point it doesn't even matter.
I'm doing this, dude. I'm writing this.
The show's already so big; nobody cares.
It's already huge, dude. And I think Netflix is going to be a buyer on this this program, dude. Episode three is going to be like secondary characters.
Oh, yeah.
Like, hey, what are we doing about that little guy that we all used to make fun of? But it's not cool to make fun of him anymore, or whatever that guy's name was. We could get a whole ep out of that, dude.
Yeah. The guy behind the guy.
The guy behind the guy behind the guy. So what's the attraction? What's the draw with these shows?
Well, okay. So I'll speak for myself, baby. Yeah. I think for me, man, So I love drama.
Yeah.
So I never can explain it like well enough to people that ask what kind of movies and shows I like.
Sure.
I like drama. I could watch an entire show of like Downton Abbey, and the only thing they're doing is sitting around dialoguing around the dinner table, and that would be an amazing ep for me. Like,
well,
I would
dude, and if it's
that.
Good and if it's well done, that can work so well.
Absolutely, and like yeah. I love sort of like personal engagement. I love dialogue. Like I just love dialogue. So and there's something about Downton that it's pure dialogue.
Dude,
and
it's off the charts on those things.
It's off the charts on the dialogue, there's a humor mixed with a just sort of a depth of character and a sort of like a longing and kind of sadness and kind of a, man, I don't know where my life is going and I'm concerned about the future and there's a lot of pain in my story. I love all of that. I don't know why I love all of that, but I love all of that. And I think so that's what kind of wraps me into Downton. But I think the bigger narrative with that, which is I think we're going to connect on this, is that there's just something, there's something magical about the UK, kind of growing up reading, you know, maybe it's just because I read Narnia books and, you know, the things of that nature where it's like, there's something that I've kind of made that all like kind of a mythical place in my head, I think.
Baby, you ever been?
I've never been.
Yeah. I've never actually been either.
I've done like a layover at their airport.
I've been a lot of places and I think I've done the layover there too, but like I've never actually gotten out.
Which is so dumb because it's like it's like a shorter flight than if I was going to fly to like California right now. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah,
it's like,
dude, exactly. It's probably
nothing.
Cheap right now too.
And it's cheap, but it's like, but I just think that there's something so like magical about, and you know what it is? It's the era. I've always been fascinated by pre-technology era.
Babe,
and just
you know
the simplicity of life. And there's something about that that I'm so drawn to.
Dude, 100%, man. Me too, 100%. It was the era of restraint.
Yeah.
Right? It was the era of like not saying everything that you were thinking. It was the era of, I don't know, some stuff goes unsaid and there's subtext. And I think for me, man, that's what makes the drama really pop. And it's why I love these like Jane Austen things that KK watches where like, not everything is a hot take, you know, like they're keeping a little stuff under the vest. They're kind of, you know, communicating it subtextually, as opposed to like 2020 where it's just like, I hate this guy. I love this guy. I'm with him. I'm against her, you know, and
there's no nuance, man.
Downton
has
like,
nuance. And I think we're drawn to that. We're drawn to the, Downton has margin. And I think we are drawn to like nuance and to margin. I'm so drawn to slow-paced things. Even though I have a hard time sitting still. I mean, admittedly.
Sure. Yeah.
But like I'm drawn, so this is what I've always said, man. I've always said this to Big M, like, dude, if I could literally just spend like 3 months living that Downton Abbey's life, I go, that would be my wish if somebody gave me a wish.
Yeah. But I mean, even as you say that, like part of what made the show brilliant was they didn't idealize it.
They did.
Like even Lord Grantham, dude, this guy's got every kind of creature comfort in the world. He's got all the money in the world. He's got all the free time, everything that we would say we want.
Mm-hmm.
His life is still fraught with difficulty because there are people in it and there's issues. Okay. So I think as you were talking, something became crystal clear to me about Downton that the English game lacked. And it's this. Downton Abbey, I think, was really careful not to make a saint out of any character or people group besides Sybil. Obviously, Sib was a saint. Everything she did was
that was it,
magical.
Though, really.
Yeah, that was it. But so the poor people downstairs in Downton, they weren't like, oh, they're saints because they're poor. You know, every motive they have is pure, you know, nor did they, again, besides Sib, nor did they saint any of the rich people. And I think it made for a really authentic, believable show where you were like, yeah, even if I'm totally not invested in, you know, whether or not Tom Branson makes a run at Sybil, I care about all these people. Okay. Even the ones I don't like, I care what happens to them. And I think that's what the English game lacked, dude. The English game felt real kind of slipshod in terms of, okay, we got to make heroes out of these people. We got to make villains out of these people. We got to make you feel sorry for this girl because she had a baby with this rich guy and now nobody respects her. It just felt real kind of thrown together. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree, man. I think timing was the issue. I go back to what you said, man. I think a 2-hour movie would have been great. If not, give us 15 eps to stretch it out and develop character a little bit. But yeah, I just think that there was, it's hard for me to really invest in something when there isn't at least one or two characters that I absolutely feel some affinity for. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this was just like, I mean, besides like some of the, you know, you talked about Jimmy's wife. I mean, great, right? But she was barely in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I even liked Arthur's wife, but like just, you know, okay. I mean, it wasn't like a bit part, but there just wasn't enough to grab onto there. And I think what I was left with was I want to see the next ep, but I'm not thinking about it before I watch it like I do with Downton Abs. And dude, this is the big word for me, man. None of it was inspiring.
Yeah, I'm with you. It felt like a sequel. You know what I mean?
No,
it felt
that's
like
really good. Yeah.
We're gonna throw Julian Fellowes' name at it. We're gonna throw the beautiful sweeping vistas of England at it, and we're going to put some people in costumes and we're going to call it a Julian Fellowes thing and you're going to watch and we're going to sell it to Netflix for $1 billion.
Well, here's the thing, man. I mean, I don't know, you know, let's talk a little bit more of the practical side of this, you know? Yeah. So Julian Fellowes, I mean, you know, I don't know how the business works for him. You know, it seems like a guy that can write, he seems like he should be a guy that can write his own ticket. Because here's the thing. If you would have told me, hey, Julian Fellowes is thinking about writing this movie on like how, you know, soccer, the origins of soccer from like the English aristocracy and, you know, all this, I would have been like, dude, that sounds money. Let's get on that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I like that. I would have liked all of that conceptually. You know what I mean? So I don't know. Julian Fellowes, it just seemed, I don't know. I mean, maybe he was like, dude, I don't have time. I'm working on something else, but that sounds like a good, you guys want to do 6 eps of this? You know how those deals work with, you know, it's like a guy from our tribe saying, yeah, I'll do that commentary on the Book of James, or yeah, I just want to write this Christian living book. It's 8 chapters. I can knock it out in a month. You know?
Yeah,
like,
totally.
What do you want to do? You
know? I'll throw my name on it and X number of people are probably going to buy it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and dude, you know, like I don't blame Julian Fellowes for doing that. Like, and you and I are realists, man. We're the ultimate realists, which is odd for fours, I think. But you and I both know if you can make your money in the business, make it. Like, if you can make money off your name, make it. And, you know, this isn't necessarily a show that he has to feel ashamed of. It just wasn't great. You know? Yeah, it lacked the magical kind of greatness quality that Downton brought.
I mean, what do you do if you're Julian Fellowes and you have Downton Abs? You know, I mean, on the mantle for the rest of your life. What do you do?
Okay,
with that?
So I've thought about that. I've thought about it. Here's what I think you have to do. And obviously, nobody listened to me because Julian Fellowes has made about $10 billion more dollars in media than I've made. Right? So don't listen to me.
Just a dollar or two more, baby. Don't be hard on yourself.
You take away, baby. Listen, you take away all the money, all the awards. I think if you're Julian Fellowes and you've got, how long did Downton run? 6-7 years of Downton on the mantle?
Was it 6 seasons? I should
something
know that.
Like
I'm
that,
not sure.
Dude. Yeah. And just a banger. Everybody loved it. You know, I think if you're Julian Fellowes, you got to make a completely different kind of movie. You know what I mean? You make some movie about, I don't know, London in 2020, or you make a movie set in Chicago, or you do some totally different thing where people
you're saying flip the script completely. Don't do what people are expecting you to do.
just so that people aren't always comparing it to Downton. Yeah. You know, because you make some costume drama set in England in 1850 and everybody's going, why doesn't this feel more like Downton?
Totally.
He almost couldn't escape that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Unless he makes a totally different movie. I don't know. I just think,
I mean, I don't know what it was. Obviously, he had a lot of people working with him. Every once in a while, a show comes along where the cast is so great
yeah.
and all the pieces come together. It's so rare when that happens.
Well, I tell you what you had in Downton, dude. And some of this is practicality and budget. Like Downton, you had a couple of really, really established actors. Like the Maggie Smith kind of kiss on the totally. Ring. That gave Downton a sense of gravitas right out of the gate that this yeah. didn't have. Even the guy that played Lord Grantham, like he's been in British movies and television for like 30 years.
Yeah,
I mean, that guy's kind of a legend, dude.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you put the two of them in this show and it grounds it. It gives it a sense of gravitas. Yeah. In the English game, and the other thing that was brilliant about that with Downton was that it let you fall in love with kind of some of these new people. You know what I mean? So guys like Barrow that you hadn't seen on the screen before because you live in America or whatever.
Oh.
It was really easy to like, and even the guy, dude, even the guy that played Carson, legend, right?
Yeah.
So
I think it was a part of it too, man. And I don't know how they managed to do this, but you even yeah. liked the villains in Alice.
Yeah, totally.
So like there was something, and there was never a part, there was never a character that didn't have at least some comic relief.
Totally. Totally. You know,
so there was funniness. Everything wasn't always so dead serious. There was always something. There was a, you could always crack a smile at every character at some point in the series.
Well, and in that, it was a lot like real life. You know what I mean? Where you're having a bad day or you're in conflict with somebody, but then something funny happens or somebody breaks the tension or whatever. You know, it gave you different pitches. Like it gave you different tones.
That's a great word. It was like a multitude of like varying tones and colors is what it was.
Totally.
Even though you had your favorites, I mean, obviously you didn't like Tom, but you had your favorite. That's what's so great about it. It was such like a multicolored cast.
Totally. All right. So last question, man. Then we're gonna hop. We're gonna cut this thing at a very tidy 45 minutes because I think that's our wheelhouse. You know, we do good work in that time slot. And I know you don't like playing this game, dude, but I'm kind of fascinated by it. Oh, also, baby, I just had an idea.
Yeah, throw
it. We need to do a whole Happy Abby podcast in which we run down the roster of Downton Abbey's characters and we just Enneagram type them.
Oh, yeah, Enneagram type. Let's do it. We'll do it next week.
Yeah, we'll do it next time.
Now that we're back on Happy Abs, man.
Happy Abs needs to be weekly. I don't know about you, but I've been thinking and praying about this a lot. We need to drop these weekly. All right, dude. I mean, call it the quarantine talking, whatever. But we need to go a lot more on the regs.
Well, it's just keeping the greatest television program of all time alive.
Well, absolutely, dude. It's appreciation. But like, which Downton character are you? You know what I mean? As you look at the whole universe of Downton characters, who's Ron? Who's Big R?
Man, that's a great question, man. That's a really great question. You know, gosh, man, I probably would have been, I don't know. I hope this doesn't sound arrogant, but no. I would have been Mary's, her second husband. I would have been that dude, the race car driver.
Mr. Pamuk? Oh, no, the second husband, the race car driver. Why, baby?
I don't know. I wouldn't have been, you know, there was like a... There was something you couldn't really figure out about him. You could tell he was conflicted. He wants to be his own guy, but he knew he had to play the game when he had to play the game. He was very strategic in that way. He had a super sold out to cars, but it didn't quite turn out the way he wanted it to turn out.
Yeah.
And so there was kind of a sadness. There was a melancholy aspect to him.
Dude, he was kind of melancholy.
He was. No, he was. I don't know. He wasn't my favorite character, but I resonated with him in terms of like, if you're asking me what guy would you have been on that, I probably would have been that guy.
Yeah. That's fascinating.
Half as handsome, but that guy. Yeah.
Well, yeah, dude, but that's a really interesting one because I feel like you connected with that character on some kind of emotional level, you know? dude, for me, I think it was, I think the one that I connected with on that level, there were tons that I loved. Like, there's a little bit of Mr. Carson in me. Like,
oh, dude.
Dude, cranky and yeah. Can be funny. Like, so there's a little bit of that. But the one that I related to the most was Lord Grantham himself.
Yeah.
In that he had just an inordinate number of people to keep happy. Mm-hmm. And he really sold the whole notion that, like, you got the feeling in some of those scenes. He's sitting there in his library. He's trying to read his paper and sip a scotch like a gentleman. And people are just coming at him with stuff, dude. And there were times where you got the vibe from him where it was like, if one more person walks into here and asks for something, I'm going to take this letter opener and, like, stab myself to death. You know, I'm literally going to gouge my eyes out if you people don't give me, like, 5 minutes. That's kind of how I feel. So I really sympathized with him on that level. Like, just so many people to keep happy, so many plates spinning. You never really knew the real him. You know what I mean? And I think if you're a people
totally
pleaser...
Accurate.
Yeah, if you're in the people pleasing business like I am, like, very few people know how I really am, and I think that was Lord Grantham in a nutshell, dude. He had all this stuff going on in his mind and in his heart that he just never let people see.
He was a very conflicted man, but he also had an intense loyalty to, like, the craft,
the way of life, yeah,
which was him taking care of Downton Abbey and making sure it was flourishing. But he made a ton of mistakes.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I totally resonated with him. You know what I mean?
Because
he
really believed in the mission of Downton.
He believed in the mission. Totally.
And in a way, that was the only thing he believed in. You know what I mean? I don't think he trusted anybody. Here's a fascinating one, dude. And I realized I said I was going to cut it at 45. I don't think he even trusted his own wife. You know what I mean? Like, I think he liked her at times, but there was a sense of disconnect between them that, again, was really authentic, dude.
And really, really very English, maybe very of that era.
Too. Maybe of that era. Maybe it's English. Note to my wife, who I know is going to listen to this, that's not the part of Lord Grantham that I resonated with. I don't feel like there's a level of distrust
double
between
K,
us.
This does
yeah,
not apply.
Yeah. Double K does not apply to you, dude.
It's okay.
Yeah, so, so yeah, I don't know, man.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And if I wouldn't have said that guy, which was more particular, I probably would have said Lord Grant, because I mean, there's, you know what? It's so weird for a guy that had that kind of, who walked around with that kind of title, that kind of clout. He was very much an everyman in a lot of ways.
Dude, he was. And I think he just wanted to be an everyman.
Yeah.
There were a couple of scenes, dude, and I forget. Oh, they were playing cricket. Mm-hmm. Where he's out there with, like, his sleeves rolled up and he's playing cricket and he's kind of, like, busting chops. And I'm like, oh, this is kind of who he wants to be, you know? But he can't because of all the responsibility and all the crap that he has to do. He can't really be the fun-loving man of the people.
And, dude, it's no different than a lot of us experience in our own, like, jobs or vocations where it's like, I mean, it's not like you're trying to be, it's not like you're trying to be inauthentic. It's just you have to put on a particular kind of face.
You do.
You know, there is a, there is kind of a, you know what I'm saying? So
it's like a vocational demand almost.
It's a vocational demeanor,
Yes.
Almost. It's like, this is part of who I am, but it's like, if you were to see me in another context, it wouldn't be totally who I am.
Totally.
You know? And yeah, and he was kind of like, at the same time as there was what you saw is what you got with him. He had kind of a chameleon like quality because I think he was a bit of a tortured soul.
Yeah, I think he was too, dude. And yet though, and this is what the English game lacked, it came out so subtly with him.
Totally.
You know what I mean? Like, it came out so subtly what his issues were. And even like, when he has that little dalliance with, like, the lady that comes to work at the house or whatever, and it's pretty subtle, and you can tell he's tortured, he's conflicted about it, but he's getting a certain kind of attention from her, et cetera, et cetera. There was nothing that subtle in the English game. The English game, no disrespect to my students, so I teach this, like, 100 level screenwriting class, not 100 level, but it's like an intro to screenwriting class, and all the plot vehicles in the student scripts, for the most part, like, they're really big, it's like
over the top.
you know, they got in a car wreck and now she's got amnesia, or, you know, the dad's abusive. And it's really these big, like, on the nose kind of plot points, which is kind of what you had in the English game, mm-hmm. you know, where mm-hmm. everything's really on the nose. But I think life is really subtle. You know, life tends to be kind of lived in the gray areas. And, yeah. you know, for us as believers, that's where most of the battles are fought, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And I think that was what was so completely connectable about Down.
Well, the fact that we could connect with a show that showed like the upper, you know, English aristocracy of like the 20th century, you know, the early 20th century. I mean, that's phenomenal that we could feel that tied in and that close to something like that. We have no other connection with.
Totally.
I mean, that says something about it. It really shows like how, you know, how Julian is able to, I mean, the humanity that he puts into his writing and his characters is like second to none, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It was really it was a masterful.
Cause it makes no sense that we should like it, that we should.
Exactly, dude. We're not the target demo. It makes no sense that we should like it. Right. Absolutely. Well, baby, this has been enjoyable. It's been a pleasure. I'll enjoy doing this next week when we do another Happy Abby.
And every week afterwards for the rest.
All kidding
of our
aside,
lives.
Dude, we really do need the Enneagram
we
type.
Do. We do.
Yeah. Which
well,
I
tell
hate.
Tell our listeners we'll get on it.
Baby, I hate myself for even saying that.
That's
like,
all
I hate
right.
that I'm that guy. You know what I mean? But I am, and I can't fight it anymore, dude.
I know. It's okay. I mean, I'm just leaning in.
Yeah.
I know. I appreciate that, man. We're having a moment.
Yeah.
I'm gonna let you have that.
It's a nice moment. I'm going to let you have it. Well, baby, we've done what we always do on this program, and we've wandered to and fro throughout a piece of British culture and a British costume drama. And until next time.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Hello, my name is Adam Comer.
And I'm Ryan Chittister.
And we're the host of Life After Addiction Podcast. If you or someone you love struggles with addiction, check us out, Life After Addiction Podcast, and you can subscribe at lifeaudio.com.